welcome to another episode of Not Another Teen Wolf podcast. We're on our seventh episode now, and I hope you liked our last episode, which veered off track a bit, where we discussed the Teen Wolf tie-in novel On Fire. But we are back to our recaps of the episodes, and this week we're up to episodes 9 and 10 of the first season, and that's Wolfsbane and Co-Captain. As usual, you can always contact us about anything you'd like discussed in the episode or any feedback on past episodes by reaching out to us on Twitter, which is NATW Podcast on Twitter, natwpodcast@gmail.com if you want to send an email, or you can have a go on Tumblr, which is notanotherteenwolfpodcast@tumblr. So Karen's going to do the recap for 109, and then we shall discuss it and move on.
Okay, we see Harris, the chemistry teacher, finding a note on his desk with a list of names. Behind him, the alpha appears, saying that it's all Harris's fault. Harris says that Laura wrote the list, and the alpha wants him to turn around, but Harris refuses. Derek shows up, followed by the police, and the alpha is forced to leave. Derek must run from the cops and the hunters at the same time, but Stiles and Scott are driving his car in order to create a diversion. In the end, they help him escape, and we learn that Laura was close to figuring something out, and it has to do with the symbol on Allison's necklace. In the next scene, Jackson is hallucinating while in the doctor's office. He thinks the doctor is pulling Wolfsbane out of the scratches in the back of his neck, when in reality, the doctor just says that they aren't serious injuries. We do learn that Jackson has been having nightmares about the Hale House fire, and also that he has aconite poisoning. Aconite is another word for Wolfsbane. Jackson tells Scott that he knows what he is, and that he wants to become a werewolf too, or else he'll tell Allison about him. He says that if he doesn't get what he wants, then Jackson will make a move on Allison and destroy any chance of Scott getting back together with her. Jackson then breaks up with Lydia. Derek and Stiles try to figure out if they can trace the text that was sent to Allison while they were trapped in the school, as it might give them a clue as to who the Alpha is. They enlist Danny's help, and he figures out that the text came from a computer at the hospital registered to Scott's mom. Meanwhile, Scott sneaks into Allison's room and steals the necklace. He gets caught outside of her house by her father, who invites him inside. Chris then asks Scott how he knows Derek, and Scott has to lie, but he tells her father that everything he did in the school was to protect Allison. At the same time, Allison is running and decides to go into the Hale house. Kate shows up and tells her that she can make Allison stronger and feel like she can really rely on herself. In the final few scenes, we learn that Peter is actually the Alpha and that Harris was the one who told Kate how to get away with arson. Jackson gives Scott 3 days to get him the bite, and the Argents see the scratches on the back of Jackson's neck and now suspect him of being the other Beta. So, what were your favorite lines for this episode?
We both had a quote here relating to the same scene, so perhaps we should both do the ones that don't relate to that and then talk about that, because this episode has maybe one of the funniest scenes in the entire series in it. But my quote that wasn't involved in that scene was actually Derek at the end towards Peter when he's facing off and he's just discovered Peter's the Alpha. Derek sort of comes in after Stiles when he realizes he sent Stiles into his doom and comes in, punches out the nurse, and Peter's like, that's not nice. She was my nurse. And he's like, Derek's just like, she's a psychotic bitch helping you kill people. Get out of the way, as in, like, get out of the way to Stiles. But it's just, he doesn't change tone. And it's just, to me, one of the examples of when Derek is the funniest. And it's not even, like, unintentionally funny. It's not even like, oh, we're laughing at his attempt to be serious. It's, I think it is a sign of his actual kind of sardonic personality that it is a lighter moment for him, if you know what I mean. Not that it's light, but that it is for him a moment of sarcasm as opposed to serious orders. And I find him so funny when he's being sarcastic, and the delivery was just beautiful. So I hope we do get more stuff where he lightens enough to be being snarky more than yelling.
Yeah, I like this part too, especially because he just kind of like steps into the frame and elbows her in the face, and it was it was really funny. My line was from Jackson, and this is when Allison and Jackson are swimming in the pool, and they're racing, and Jackson wins, and he says, I have an unfair advantage. See these cheekbones? They're aerodynamically suited for speed and water. And I just, I really like this line because it almost gives you a hint at the Jackson. I don't know if it's necessarily the real Jackson, but, you know, the Jackson that can be nice. And I think if he stopped trying to get ahead in, you know, every aspect of his life once in a while, he could be a really funny, really good friend.
Yeah, and you never see him like this with anyone except Allison. He's never that nice right. to Lydia, except in, like, that flashback scene, sort of when they realize how much they love each other, like, later. When he smiles like that, like, he's never that nice to anyone except Allison. And, I mean, you'd hope it was genuine. It may be creepily fake, but, yeah, I really like him when he's nice, and I don't know why he isn't like that to more people, like, maybe he's like that to Danny sometimes, and that's why Danny's still his friend, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of Danny, the other bit in which we both had quotes involving it was the magical, wonderful scene of after Derek has to be a fugitive in Stiles' house, which who knows how long he had to stay there for, whether it was a few nights or whatever, but, you know, that would make a buddy comedy all on its own. But when Derek is still hanging out in Stiles' room... and Stiles brings Danny over to help him hack the phone, to help him trace the phone call. He's asking him, and then he's sort of looking at Derek and getting Derek to change shirts, and everyone sort of realizes what's going on, including Derek, who just looks like... his face, I mean, his face all of its own is just magical when he's just standing there in, like, the stripy shirt, like, with this little thundercloud face on it. It's just so funny, but... No, when Stiles and Danny are both kind of checking Derek out, and Danny's like, okay, I'll do it, and kind of, he plays along when Stiles is like, oh, that doesn't fit, try another one, and then he's like, how do you think that one looks, Danny? And Danny's like, it's not his colour, and Stiles turns to him and says, you swing for a different team, but you still play ball, don't you, Danny boy? And Danny says, you're a horrible person, and Stiles says, I know, it keeps me awake at night, and I just loved it. It was just so funny. The best thing about it was that every person in the room knew what was going on, and, you know, that Stiles was sort of pimping Derek out to get Danny to do what he wanted, and it was just so funny. It was so... I don't know if there's a funnier moment in the series. I may come across one. We may come across one in season two, but, oh, so good. And then your second quote was to do with the... repercussions of that.
Yeah, this is when later in the episode, near the end, when Derek and Stiles are in the Jeep and they're getting ready to go into the hospital, and Derek just takes Stiles's head and bangs it off the steering wheel, and Stiles is just like, ow, and then Derek's like, you know what that was for, go, telling him to go into the hospital.
Yeah.
And I just, oh my gosh, I just crack up every time.
Again, the delivery, Tyler Hoechlin's delivery, and when he was like, you know what that was for. Again, it was more of like a less angry Derek. I mean, it was angry, but it was less... Like I said last week, they interact on more of like a humanistic level than, you know, than Scott sort of only talking to him about werewolf stuff and... all of that kind of thing, and Stiles never really treating Derek like he's a monster-like threat, just a mildly annoying, angry human person, if you know what I mean. And, yeah, that the delivery of that line of Derek's as well was just so funny. It's just beautiful. I can't. I mean, to go into the actual discussion, this episode for Stiles and Derek was quite strong. We do have a little Steric segment in this episode, aside from this scene, which was when Derek showed up in Stiles' room because they are hiding him out there. When Stiles sort of has to deal with his dad being there and, you know, coming back in, and Derek slams him up against the door and is like, what are you doing? And Stiles very rightly makes the point that he's protecting Derek and that Derek pretty much has to do what he says. And Derek submits. He kind of thinks about it and is like, yeah, you're right. Lets him go. Straightens his jacket. Stiles, of course, pushes boundaries, as always, straightens Derek's jacket back right at him, but it's just very interesting, like, when you compare to the way that Scott and Derek yell at each other and just have no... regardless of whether they like each other, and regardless of whether Derek and Stiles like each other, there's just... they definitely sort of submit to each other's logic, which I find interesting, especially since earlier in the episode where they're getting Derek into the car, and... Derek's sort of like, ugh, at Scott, and Scott says, can you just trust us for 5 seconds? And Stiles pipes up and says, yeah, both of us. And then he says, or just him or whatever, but makes me question, does Derek trust Stiles, or does he trust him more than Scott? And is it because of this, like, logical behavior that they have with each other? So that's the first question that I have for you.
Yeah, I was going to say that if Derek was smart, he would trust Stiles more than Scott. I think that he recognizes Stiles' intelligence and knows that, you know, he's aware enough of everything that's going on, even if he's not a werewolf himself, and that he's a smart kid. So I think he's beginning to trust both of them more. But yeah, I would say that if he doesn't, he should trust Stiles more than Scott, because I think Stiles' judgment is better.
Yeah, it just really struck me in a way that it hadn't before, the way that people make a lot of gifs of that door slamming scene for their own slashy purposes. But yeah, it didn't strike me before how much Derek kind of got some logical information, processed it, and submitted to it, said, okay, yeah, you are in charge here. You know, I'm going to be sulky about it, but it's a thing. And he lets Stiles pimp him out later. Like, he basically, yeah, is happy to kind of let Stiles have that kind of control, just because it is logical. And him and Scott's interactions are just so frustrating, because they are, maybe just because of Scott's personality or of Scott bringing out the obstinacy in Derek, they kind of scream at each other, like, I guess almost like siblings, in that, you know, when you have those kind of irrational fights that logic doesn't really come into whatsoever, that, yes, obviously, you know, everyone should trust Stiles. I don't think we need to reiterate that at this point. But it just interests me that, yeah, Derek did react like that. And then later, when they are sort of working together and in the car, before he hits his head on the steering wheel, you know, Derek says, you know, you're going to be late, you know, for the lacrosse game, and Stiles is like, oh, I know, blah, blah. And it just, that also made me think maybe that kind of earns some respect from Derek, because compared to Scott, Stiles is here helping him, sacrificing for the cause, whereas Scott's like, don't tell me what to do. Don't take me away from Allison. Oh my God. Don't make me do anything that interferes with what I want. Whereas Stiles is being so helpful to his own detriment, if you know what I mean. And I feel like Derek must, for Derek to even have said anything about that, like that, oh, you're going to be late for the game, he must really respect that Stiles is doing that.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree. My first point was, about Harris, the chemistry teacher. And I actually hadn't picked up on this before, so it was really interesting to see it this time around. But to me, it seemed that Harris knew more than he was letting on, and not just in regard to the fire and all that, which we find out later was, you know, he was the one that told Kate about all that, but he was in the classroom in the beginning of the episode, and the alpha was behind him saying, you know, turn around, look at me, and he was saying, no, I'm not going to do that. And just how it was set up and how nervous he was and the way that he acted, it made me think that maybe he didn't know that it was a werewolf, you know, maybe that concept, you know, wasn't in his mind, but that it was something else, something maybe supernatural, not quite human. And I'm really curious now to know how much Harris actually knows of what's going on.
Yeah, I think that he is going to be more involved in season 3, and he says, you know, it was before he'd gotten sober, and, you know, curious as to what his past was. I mean, he sounds like he was quite interested in, you know, the criminal side of chemistry as well, so perhaps he was part of the wider underworld that may have included supernatural creatures in some way.
That would be interesting.
In regards to him as well, it obviously says that Laura was there looking for him. Like, she had a list of, you know, she knew it was someone called Harris, and she was tracking down all of these Harrises to try and find out who it was. That Laura was looking for information about the fire? Did we know that before? Like, you know, that they didn't know who did it. And, I mean, surely Derek knew who did it, and I guess he never told her, like, that he never told Laura the truth about what happened.
Right.
Or perhaps they knew it was Kate, or they knew it was the Argents, but they wanted to kill every single accomplice. But yeah, did we know prior to this that Laura was tracking down those people, or?
I don't think so.
Because, you know, obviously we know she came back to Beacon Hills to sort something out, and I guess it was this, but yeah, I would like to really know more about the entire story there and, yeah, how she came to come back. I mean, there's a few little bits and pieces of it about what drew her back, but I don't really understand what, like, set her off on this chase or if she knew that the Argents were involved and, you know, whether Derek could have saved her from going back there and getting killed if he'd admitted that he knew exactly who started the fire.
Right. Yeah, I don't know if he would have told her or not. I mean, I would kind of hope so, but considering his connection to Kate and, you know, just thinking back to the book, if that is what's going on, then maybe he didn't want to mention anything.
Yeah.
So that's a good question.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case, but then there's another bucket of guilt for him to deal with, so that's always good for his mental health.
yeah.
One thing that's a bit of a side note here is that Jackson's doctor, the one who sort of goes crazy in his daydream and then tells him that he's no problem. Two things about that. Number one, that doctor is actually the same character that is the lead character in the webisode Search for a Cure, which we will be discussing at a later point. And I'll just tell you this, that doctor does know about werewolves. So to anyone who hasn't seen those webisodes, that doctor actually is someone who is in on the whole werewolf scene. Not to the point Deaton is, but it's someone who had come up with these ideas himself, and that's kind of the whole plot of the webisodes. But the actor is also Tyler Posey's father, so that's interesting.
Yeah, I did not know that. That's really cool.
Yeah, Tyler Posey's father, his name is John Posey, and I think they've been in a couple of things together, but the doctor is called Dr. Fenris, and that was the doctor who was helping Jackson, and the webisodes are based around his character. So that will be interesting to discuss, and he would definitely be an interesting character to bring back in at a later date, seeing as he knows something about the werewolf scene. And if there was a reason that he seemed a little bit suspicious in that scene, though we don't know when exactly it morphed from reality to Jackson's daydream, yes, he is someone who is not unaware of werewolves. So, yeah, those two aspects are quite interesting. He's definitely someone who could come back on the show, I think.
That kind of leads us into Jackson in general, which we do find out in this episode that Jackson has been having memories of Derek, which I had actually forgotten about until I rewatched the episode. But he says he's been having nightmares of the Hale House fire, so we do know that there was that transference of memories when Derek put his claws into the back of his neck. Mm. And Natalie, your question was whether or not it was intentional.
I don't think it was, because Derek seemed very shocked that he knew anything. But it just makes me it's interesting to me that you can do that memory sharing thing unintentionally. Because obviously we see Peter do it intentionally in the next episode. But yeah, Derek seems to have done it, number one, as a beta, so not just an alpha. And number two, unintentionally sort of leaked a bit into Jackson, and maybe it's because he's so emotional about the situation, like maybe it's something you really have to control, but,
right,
you know, maybe it's something a bit like in Harry Potter, like occlumency, you know, like getting, you know, not being able to block it or something like that, like depending on how trained at it you are or how emotionally stable you are, but yeah, I think that he definitely did not intend to do that and possibly didn't even know that it was a thing.
Yeah,
because I think Derek knows. I think Derek knows a lot less than he makes out.
I think it was unintentional too, and I think that if it had been intentional, I don't think he would have shared memories of the fire. You know what I mean?
Mm.
That's pretty personal for him.
Yeah. Just very quickly, because I think that this is a less of a important point than your other one. Scott sending Allison the photos, like when they're like, oh, get back on Allison's good side, and Scott sends Allison those photos of them together during their relationship. Why does he think this is a good idea? Like, who are you? Like, what? Why do you think this is okay? Like, I mean, and then later he turns around and he's like, oh, I've learned that I know nothing about girls and that they're psychotic. Yeah, they're the ones that are psychotic, Scott. Yeah, okay. Because seriously, how upsetting would that be? Like, why would you do that? I'm not even asking a question here except, like, why did he think that was okay? And I don't think you have an answer for that.
I mean, I can see his logic where he sent the pictures to remind her of them together when they were happy and what, you know, he still wants them to be. But on the flip side of that, like, if I had just broken up with my boyfriend and he sent me all these pictures, like, yeah, I would have run out of the classroom too, because that would make me really sad. I mean, that wasn't his intention, and I don't think he realized that would have been a consequence of what he did, but I do kind of understand, like, where he was coming from when he did that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was still not really a very smooth move.
It was so bizarre, and like, all the things she said, she was like, are you trying to hurt me? Are you trying to make me upset? That's what I'd think. I'd think it was like a guilt thing or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, and, oh, I don't know. He's interesting, that one. He's really not that. I'm surprised that we didn't get a scene between him and Styles, like, where Styles heard about him doing that and was like, what is wrong with you? Because
yeah.
Styles, despite never having had a girlfriend, would never do that. The other thing was I just wondered if you had any thoughts, besides from the kind of friendship stuff in the pool, like, any thoughts about how, like, Jackson is acting towards Allison and about the Jackson and Lydia breakup?
I felt, okay, to start off with the lesser of the two, I did feel bad for Lydia when Jackson broke up with her, especially how he said it. I mean, he said it through text, and he was like, you know, I'm getting rid of the dead weight, and give me back my house key. And you could just tell she was, like, so shocked. She never saw it coming.
Mm.
So I felt really bad for her. As far as Allison and Jackson go, this episode, I found Jackson so creepy and so, like, I just wanted to punch him in the face.
Yeah, because,
like,
it's not just his interactions with Allison, it's the way that he keeps talking to Scott about Allison, and I'm like, it's really not great, like, the way that you keep talking about her, like, very assumptive that she's gonna go after you and have all this sex with you or whatever. It sounds a bit, like, you know, not that great, a bit rapey.
It's so degrading how he speaks her.
Yeah, and it's interesting because then he turns around and he is so friendly to her in such a genuine way that we don't see with anyone else. And like what you were saying before, like, you know, if that's the real him, then how can he talk about her like that? Or if that's not the real him, like, is that like a crazy psychopathic act of being friendly on the outside and it's none of it's real, if you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Very bizarre.
Okay, so the next major point that we have is Kate. Oh, Kate. She has two quotes here that I have. The first one being when she tells Allison, you don't have to be psychotic to be a killer. And this makes me really believe that Kate doesn't see a problem with what she does. I mean, I think that she kind of has a point, like, you don't have to be absolutely crazy to kill people, and
she,
we
just
see that
says, yeah, you have to have,
like,
a reason, like,
and we see that with Chris. Like, Chris obviously kills, you know, werewolves and stuff. He's done it before, but I wouldn't say that he's crazy. I mean, it's just what he does. It's what his family does. It's his job.
Mm.
But Kate believes that what she does is the same thing and that it's totally fine. And it's just like, no, like, there's just something so unstable about her. It's incredible that she can even function in normal society.
Yeah, and I mean, it interests me in contrast to Derek when he meets with Peter and he says the quote that I mentioned, that, like, you know, that she's a psychotic bitch helping you kill people. It's very clear that Derek doesn't really approve of killing people in general, that he, I think Derek's made a lot of threats about trying to kill Jackson and, oh, I'll kill Scott and whatever. But, like, until the end of the season, I don't think we see Derek kill anyone. And I would actually be unsurprised if he had killed anyone before that. You know, I don't know if he would have had any reason to. Obviously, he'd want to kill the people, you know, involved in the fire, or that at least Peter sort of coerces him to want that. But you didn't see him out there hunting all those people down and killing them. Like, and he's, you know, keeps being accused of being a murderer. And, yeah, he basically isn't really like that. Like, I don't feel like that he, not like in a pacifist way. Like, obviously he'd defend himself when he does kill some creatures. But we hear him so many times being like, oh, I'm going to kill so-and-so, and he never does. Like, he's just...
Yeah,
he's not really like that at all, and, you know, he is a predator, he's a werewolf, but, you know, he clearly, at least at first, until, you know, Peter starts exerting influence over him, he doesn't even approve of what Peter has been doing, even though it was his family too, and all of that. The
and
contrast
I have...
of that, between that and Kate, is just, yeah, a lot.
It's really strong, yeah. I have more on this later, too, at the end of the next episode, where I think you see even more of Derek in that side where he doesn't really want to hurt anybody, that he's just all talk.
Mm.
But the next quote that I have from Kate is when they are at the lacrosse game and Allison points out Jackson. And Kate says that, you know, he's a hottie or whatever. And she says, maybe if I was in high school again, maybe a substitute teacher.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa. I mean, that is just really reminiscent of the book. And I'm sure that, you know, she pulled from this part.
Mm.
But yeah, that was just like really kind of sickening to me.
Yeah, just the way she's like, oh, yeah, God, I wish I was in high school. Or even just a substitute. And it's just like, throw away, and like, you know, maybe Allison didn't make that big a deal of it at a time, and I know I didn't make that big deal of it the first time I watched it either, and now it's
right.
Just like, let me tell you people what I've written down in the document about the notes about this point. I've written in all caps, just Karen's put the quote, and I have just added in all caps, Kate, I hate you, die. So that is my feelings on the matter.
Close, yeah.
So she's a nasty person with questionable morals, so I don't think that's news, but yes, I did not notice that the first time around, and obviously after reading the book, the implication is a lot more horrible. My last point about this episode was when Derek meets Peter, when he realizes Peter is the alpha, and he kind of get Styles out of the way, and they're having that confrontation, and Derek is, you know, angry at him about killing Laura and about everything that he's been doing. Peter says, or he claims, that when he killed Laura, he didn't really know what he was doing, that he was healing slowly from the fire, like cell by cell healing in his body and mind, and that he had killed Laura before his full mental capacity had returned, and that, you know, and his personality had returned, so it wasn't really him doing it, but that becoming the alpha had sort of kick-started the healing more, and that's why he developed so quickly after he killed her. Do you believe that? Like, do you believe that his personality has changed more, that he was less in his right mind, and that he is gaining capacity, and that, you know, he wouldn't have killed Laura in, you know, the mental state he is now? Or do you think that he was lying to Derek?
I think he was lying to Derek. And the reason why I believe that is because he says that the personality was literally burned out of him, and that he's running on pure instinct. And I think that took place immediately after the fire, not when he became the alpha. So he was already this more animalistic version of himself before Laura came along, and I think when Laura came along, he saw that as an opportunity to become an alpha and maybe kickstart the healing process. Maybe that's why he just did it to begin with, you know, I mean, to heal faster. So I think that him killing Laura was intentional, and that it was definitely for his own purposes.
Yeah, I mean, I took that, if I was going to believe him, and I don't know if I do, if I was going to believe him, I would take that as him saying, like, that the instinct of just, like, a werewolf, like a someone without any human control, is to see a challenging alpha and kill them, and that he did it without realizing that, you know, he was her uncle, and that, you know, he loved her, and whatever, like, that, you know, that he wasn't calculatedly like, I am killing Laura, I am willing to kill her for my own gain. So in that context, if I was going to believe him, I would say that it would be like, yeah, that he was running on instinct, the instinct to challenge an alpha and become the alpha. But I don't know if I do actually believe him or not. I'm not sure, because he does seem to really not mellow out. I think he's always very calculated and crazy, but you know, he does change a little bit over the course of the series, so, and the healing process does make sense. Like, if it's, you know, if it's building up very slowly, it does make sense in a way.
Yeah, that's true.
So we're going to do our second episode now, Co-Captain, and this episode picks up a couple of hours after the last one ends. Like, the lacrosse team wins the game that they were playing in. Scott realizes that Styles still hasn't shown up, and he searches for him in the celebrations, and then he's distracted by Allison coming in to congratulate him. When the team leaves, Scott is cornered in the locker room by Peter and Derek. Derek seems to have accepted Peter as his alpha, and the two Hales try to convince Scott to accept his place in their pack. Peter claws Scott to share his memories of the fire and show them and show him why they are doing what they're doing. The next day, Jackson faces car trouble and breaks down in an industrial area where he's found and seemingly helped by Chris Argent. We see Chris has actually planted a device in the car to cause it to break down, and Chris inspects Jackson's neck, pushing him about the scratches. Scott and Stiles find them and try to pick Jackson up and keep him away from Chris, and Scott expresses once again how dangerous it all is and how stupid it is for Jackson to want to be involved. He tells him that Chris thinks that Jackson is the other beta, and now Scott has to watch out for him. When Allison discovers her necklace is missing, she goes to look for it in her car and overhears her dad and Kate talking about Hunter things. She becomes more confused and suspicious. Kate spots her and leaves a special arrowhead in a place where Allison can take it and test it out. She later makes Lydia come with her when she goes to test it in the woods, where she discovers it catches on fire. Scott tracks them down and surprises her there. She shoots him with her taser before realizing that it was actually him. But when he recovers, he gives her back the necklace, which he claims he found at school, and she's very grateful, and they hug and talk. Stiles finds his dad working late, and when the sheriff asks him to pour a drink, Stiles ends up purposely getting his dad drunk in order to get him to reveal confidential details of the murder cases that Derek has been charged with. As they discuss it, it becomes apparent that the murder victims were connected and accomplices in some way to the Hale House fire, convicted arsonist, and the bus driver was the guy who did the insurance fraud on the house. When the sheriff starts to get emotional about how he had missed talking to Stiles and Mrs. Stiles' mother, Stiles looks like he hates himself for what he's doing and stops his dad from drinking anymore. Allison comes over to talk to Scott about what she's learning about her family, but when Peter Hale shows up to take Scott's mum on a date in order to threaten Scott, Scott has to abandon Allison there in order to sabotage the date. Meanwhile, Derek goes after Jackson, convincing Jackson that he will be turned into a werewolf when the Hales actually plan to kill him to stop him spreading the secret. Scott finds out about the plan from Peter and rushes to the Hale House to save Jackson, but as he and Derek start to fight, the hunters begin to gun down the house with machine guns. Scott is shot by a wolfsbane bullet and rescued by Deaton, who reveals he's some sort of vet for werewolves, and Kate finally lets Allison in on their family secret by showing her a strung-up, fully wolfed-out Derek who she's keeping prisoner. So that was fun. What were your favorite lines from this episode?
My first one was from Peter, and this one was when he said, "When we were in high school, we played basketball, and now there's a real sport." And I just really liked this one because I felt like it was a throwback to the original movie,
yeah,
where Scott and all them, they're actually on the basketball team, not a lacrosse team. And I thought it was almost kind of like a throwback, but also picking on the show a little bit too, and I just kind of like those self-aware kind of jokes that TV shows have in them sometimes, so I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, like, because a lot of people who watch it are like, lacrosse, what is the big deal about lacrosse? And they're very confused by it all.
The other one I really liked, which I'm going to expand on more a bit in the discussion, but was when Derek says, "Wouldn't there be someone here trying to save you?" talking to Jackson. "There's no one here. There's a reason. No one cares that you drive an expensive car. No one cares that you have perfect hair. And no one cares that you're captain of the lacrosse team." And Scott kind of pipes in and says, "Excuse me, co-captain." And then, you know, obviously he helps Jackson out. And I just thought, like, I really love this whole scene for a lot of different reasons, which, like I said, I'll get into in a bit. But I also like how this is sort of what explains the title of the episode, too. And this is what we were talking about before, where it's not until, like, a certain moment within the show you sort of understand how important the title of the show is.
Yeah.
And this is a perfect example of that. And I really liked this whole scene.
Because it's not as if this is the first episode in which Scott has been co-captain. He was made co-captain several episodes ago. So it's, you see it and it's like, why are you saying co-captain now? And then it's like so relevant. Like, yeah, I know what you mean. Mine were, the first of all, and I think that we are going to discuss this a little bit more later. Neither of mine were particularly funny, though I really did like, first of all, I really loved the scene in which Jackson's car broke down and Scott was trying to help him, and as the two were arguing, they kept bashing into the Jeep and Stiles kept being like, can we stop with the Jeep?
Yeah.
But my first actual quote was between Scott and Danny. You know, after the game, Danny kind of says, "Hey, McCall, apology accepted." And Scott's like, "I didn't apologize." And Danny's like, "Every time you got the ball tonight, you passed it to me." Scott says, well, every time I gave you the ball, you scored. And Danny said, like I said, apology accepted. And I thought that was a really nice example of, number one, Danny's awesomeness. You know, Danny's awesomeness and his ability to read people. But also a good example of Scott's inherent goodness that he didn't outright say, you know, go up and say, hey, Danny, sorry I knocked you down and hurt you. But he, you know, gave him the opportunity to look good and he, you know, he did something for him rather than said something to him. He made it up to him by giving him a good game. And it sort of was representative to me of the sort of sweetness Scott has, even though he doesn't really know how to do life sometimes.
Yeah, and I think it means more what he did rather than just apology, because anybody can come up with words and, you know, just say, I'm sorry, and you don't really know if they need it or not. But something like this where, you know, you're putting the spotlight on the other person in a good way,
yeah,
I think means a lot more than if he just said, hey, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and then it's interesting that Danny totally understood that as well, whereas some people would be like, oh, I don't care about that. You didn't say I'm sorry kind of thing, if you know what
yeah.
I mean. And I've always loved Scott and Danny, like, as they were, the first time I watched the show, I was like, more than any dynamic of any kind of pairing or anything, I was like, is Scott and Danny a thing? Like, is that a thing in fandom? Because you're just going to get more, like, in the next few episodes, but they just have this real interesting dynamic that I really love. And yeah, if Danny becomes more of a character, it's kind of cool that I think Danny could be very good for Scott in a, you know, as a friend, if he understands him that well.
Yeah.
The other one I really liked was actually Allison, when she basically makes Lydia come into the woods with her to shoot off her crazy bow and arrow, and she's kind of sassing Lydia. She's saying, oh, you know, JSYK, Jackson invited me to the winter formal. Is that cool? Like, and Lydia's like, I guess. And then just as friends, right, and Allison says, well, yeah, I mean, it's not like I would take him into the coach's office and make out with him or anything. And it just interested me, like, you know, here was another example of friends punishing one another on this show, much like Styles in the water bowl. How did Allison know what happened between Lydia and Scott? Was it ever established?
No, it wasn't. And I don't know if that was something that Scott would have told her, or, I mean, I can't imagine that. Obviously, Lydia didn't tell her. Styles, I don't think, would have told her. Jackson, you know, that's true. I guess he could have been the other one, considering he sort of figured it out as well.
Mm. So, yeah, it was just interesting to me that she knew, and also that she was, you know, sort of being so happy to kind of punish Lydia, which I suppose happens between friends. But I always wonder about Allison and Lydia, like, whether their friendship is particularly deep, because we do see her, you know, them get concerned about each other at points and when Lydia's in the hospital, but generally, we've never really had any kind of, like, life-affirming friendship conversations between Lydia and Allison, in my opinion. It seems like one of the most shallow relationships on the show, that it's just like, oh, I've decided you're going to be my new BFF girlfriend, but there's never really much depth to it, and they're often a little bit, not bitchy to one another, usually they're fine. I mean, Lydia's kind of bitchy to everyone, but there are moments where Allison's not really afraid to kind of, you know, be rude to Lydia and Jackson on behalf of Scott, like in the first half of the season, like in the bowling and all of that kind of thing. And
yeah,
I don't know. I'm just, Allison and Lydia's friendship confuses me a little bit, and it always has.
Yeah, it confuses me too, because I feel like for Lydia, it's sort of like a show. Like, you know, this new girl comes to school. She's going to probably be popular. She's pretty. She's smart. And, you know, she's somebody that doesn't know Lydia already. So maybe she can sort of mold their friendship into what she wants it to be, you know, kind of show Allison the side of her that she wants to show her, rather than somebody who's known Lydia her whole life and maybe knows more about her.
Yeah.
And yeah, I agree that it's sort of shallow, and Allison, I think, you know, just sort of went along with it because she was the new girl, she wanted a friend, you know, Lydia's obviously very popular, so she didn't mind, you know, being picked up by her or anything. But yeah, I always found it strange because there was never any indication that they had gotten close. It just sort of happened all of a sudden. Like, there was that one line where Lydia was sort of like, oh, you're my new best friend. And then, you know, like, literally that was the establishment of the relationship. And it was just sort of weird to me, too.
Yeah, it is strange. I don't know. Maybe there'll be more of that in the next season. But it almost seems like that Allison is, like, better friends with Jackson than she is with Lydia.
Yeah. Also, I wanted to say in this scene, too, we sort of see, like, a harder side of Allison that, I mean, obviously it goes kind of crazy in season two, but I really like seeing that sort of sassier, you know, sort of harder side of Allison, because usually she's so compliant and especially with Scott, you know, just the relationship that they have and the sort of personality that we've seen of her so far, that it's kind of cool just to see that sort of sassier side of her. I liked it.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, again, she is very ruthless, and it looks like that a lot of the characters on this show, I feel like, are quite hard and when pushed, and it'll be interesting to see that happen to sort of each of them in turn. Obviously, it happens pretty severely to Allison in season two. I think it's waiting to happen with Styles, and Lydia is sort of more vulnerable, like, at the moment, and in season two has sort of vulnerability, but once she figures out what's going on, you know, that will be interesting as well. In regards to that scene, though, my first point was actually in regards to that scene as well, which was when Allison went off to investigate the rustling and left Lydia there with her bow, and she shot out with her taser and discovered it was Scott. Which was all very funny.
That was so funny.
I was watching, number one, I was watching Tyler Posey's face, like, when he got shot with the taser, and I was like, that would be so fun to act, but I would feel so self-conscious. I'd be like, I was just, like, picturing myself, like, trying to make those faces on purpose, and I just don't know how it would be, how that would end up going. But it was really funny.
I loved it when he kept jerking and then he'd talk a little bit louder at the same time, and, like, oh, that was just brilliant.
Yeah, like, like he loves her so much that he doesn't want to say, like, oh, you've accidentally killed me. Oops. No, when they were kind of talked and he gave her the necklace, you know, he was like, sorry if this is stalkerish. And she's like, no, you're just weird like you always are. And the way that she sort of hugged him then, that to me was very, like, very emotional and very real. Like, in another show, that might have been a moment where they were like, oh my god, we still love each other, let's kiss and we'll get back together right now, and then they'll break up again in the next episode and then get back together. But it was that real nice moment of kind of like, I still care about you and I'm hugging you kind of thing, and it just seemed really real. Like, we've said that a lot of the sort of teenage interactions and things in this show are a bit more real, even when they're less dramatic than a lot of other TV shows, that things can be understated in a way that is quite realistic. And I thought this was like that hug was very much like, you know, I still care about you, and, you know, this has been upsetting, and I miss you kind of thing, and I really liked it.
Yeah, so did I. It was so expressive, and, like, you just felt how much she missed him, and, you know, it was sort of like, this was the first time that we actually got to see how much being apart has really affected her. I mean, you know, with the pictures, we sort of saw that too, but, like, she was angry and upset, and this was just like, I really miss you, and I don't like that this is happening. But, you know, then she gets up and she sort of walks away without looking at him, and it's kind of like, you know, everything's not okay, but I still miss you.
Yeah. The other thing with Scott and Allison I wanted to mention was at the beginning, when she comes into the locker room for whatever reason, like, whether it was to see Scott or Jackson or whatever, and she catches up with Scott, and she's kind of like, you did pretty awesome out there, and he goes, thanks, you too. And she manages to turn it into this whole joke about, you know, oh yeah, I did do pretty awesome at my cheering, and they're all kind of silly and back and forth. But I put this down because I've totally done this, and I've also had I've also had it done to me in a way that I will never ever forget because it was a celebrity. Okay, this is a long story, but in London a few years ago, I went and saw a stage play that was starring an actor that I really like from movies, who's a British actor called Tom Sturridge. I'm not sure if you know who that is. He's an extremely good-looking young man. He was most recently in On the Road. He's been in a bunch of stuff. He was in a movie I love, which is called The Boat That Rocked, or I think in America it was released as being called Pirate Radio, which is an amazing, 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 like, British comedy film about pirate radio, and it has, like, Philip Seymour Hoffman, it has Bill Nighy, it's a beautiful film. Anyway, I really enjoy him, and anyway, he was in this play, and I went to see it, and then afterwards, the cast sort of came out into, like, the bar, like, the lobby, and I went and met him, and I was somewhat awkward, and I was just like, but so was he, because I was we were talking about sort of the oddities of the play, and I was like, you keep being cast in things where they make you a crazy murderer. And he's like, I know, because he's been in this other film called Like Minds with Eddie Redmayne, where he was like a crazy murdering schoolboy, so that was fun too. And at the end, I'm like, right, well, I'm going to go. I'm like, have a good run. And he go, like, as in, like, I was like, I was telling him, you know, to have a good, you know, run of the play, but I just said, oh, have a good run. And he was like, you too. And then he kind of looks at himself and he goes, you too. Like, he kind of shakes his head at himself and is like, he was so derpy, and it was, my friends who were there talk about it all the time because of how stupid it was. But yeah, it just, I saw that and it just reminded me of that so much because of how ridiculous it was. But yeah, the scene in general was, again, I think part of the rebuilding kind of process. And, you know, I liked that she kind of took his silliness and turned it into a conversation. She's not kind of judgmental of his derpiness.
And I think a lot of this is reflective, too, of the conversation that she overheard in the last episode where he was telling her dad that, you know, everything he did in the school was to protect her. And I think that's part of where this sudden change, you know, is coming from and everything. And I like that it is the slower buildup of, like, them kind of testing the waters again and being close to each other again, not getting right back into it, but sort of just, like, establishing that friendship again, and then they'll obviously do whatever they do at the end of the season and into the next season. So yeah, I liked all of this.
Yeah.
The other scene that really stood out for me in this episode was between Stiles and his dad. And, you know, it started off really hilarious, which they do this a lot with Stiles. You expect him to be so funny, and then, you know, by the end of a certain scene, you're, like, practically in tears. And I think that has a lot to do with Dylan O'Brien, but also the writing and just the whole dynamic and everything in general. But this was one of those where it started off so funny because he's trying to get his dad drunk, you know, to get the information out of him. And then, you know, they keep talking, and he's starting to figure things out, and Stiles kind of begins to figure out what's going on here, and he goes to call Scott, and that's when his dad sort of says, you know, I really miss talking to you, I really miss your mom. And Stiles is just like, what did you say? And you can see him sort of like put the phone away, and his dad goes to pour himself another drink, and Stiles just stops him, and it's just like so heartbreaking. And it was just such a beautiful scene.
Yeah, and I mean, you can tell Stiles, even in the beginning when he's doing it, feels pretty dirty about it. Like, it's not like he's one of the, you know, those kids that, like, is, you know, vindictively crafty or anything. You can see how much he doesn't like that this is how it has to be, but that it's better than the alternative, which is sort of telling his dad the truth and then potentially putting him in danger. And I was just giggling because I was remembering an earlier scene as well, in that when they were picking up Derek in the car, I think it was in the first episode, in the previous episode actually, and they're picking up Derek in the car, and he's sort of complaining and saying, oh, I had the alpha, I had him there, and then, you know, blah blah blah, the cops show up, and Stiles is like, hey, they're just doing their jobs, okay? And he's just so protective of the police force and his father in general. But yeah, you can tell that he thinks that this is a better option than the alternative, which is to get, you know, his father involved in the whole mess, but that he really doesn't feel good about it, and that he knows it's dodgy. And then when it turns serious, he's just like, no, this is really wrong. And it is, yes, sad, and very much, you know, yeah, very much representative of the kind of emotional range that Stiles brings to the show.
And it makes me wonder, too, I mean, I got the feel from this scene that they don't really talk about her all that often, and I don't know if that's whether or not they both don't want to, or if the sheriff just doesn't want to, because it seemed to me almost like Stiles was like, what did you say? Like, it was surprising that he was actually saying something about it.
Yeah.
Not necessarily that he doesn't ever want to talk about it, but maybe the sheriff doesn't.
Yeah. And I mean, when he's saying, like, you know, I miss us talking, do you think that that's, like, meant to just be, like, a recent thing, like, since the werewolf stuff? Because it sounds like that, you know, he comes in and he's like, oh, anything I can help with, that he used to, you know, help him with cases and stuff like that. And it would be interesting where it got to the, if it got to the point as well where if Styles' dad did know about the situations where he wasn't, like, you know, slapping Styles' hand away, you know, he wasn't saying, you know, this is confidential. He's like, I know you're not going to say anything, you're part of my private team, and that they're very, you know, upfront about everything, especially when he realizes how good Styles is at figuring this kind of stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
Makes me wonder if Styles would actually consider going into the police force as a detective, as a career, if we end up seeing them go that far. Like, and if he's not just part of the underground werewolf community, if you know what I mean. If he does end up holding up a real job, if he would end up being an investigatory cop as well.
Which would be useful. I mean, that could, you know, have its own sort of thing. Like how in Buffy they set up the shop and that sort of, you know, allowed them to be aware of more things and and have all the supplies and stuff. That would be interesting.
Yeah. In regards to Styles as well, I did think that the bit where Peter took Melissa out on the date and then Scott sort of ran out to try and interfere, and what he ended up doing is setting up Styles to hit them with his car. Melissa's reaction when she saw it was Styles was so funny because she clearly knows him so well that she doesn't mind, like, yelling at him like he's, you know, her kid or whatever. Did Scott think of that himself? Because that was way clever, that plan. That was like, you know, like I was, you know, I don't know if Styles came up with that or if Scott did, but it was very clever. And the Peter and Melissa aspect is interesting and a little bit sad because I think at a point later on she finds out that he was, you know, crazy and not really dating her for her, and that's a bit of a letdown for her because, you know, she deserves someone. But can you imagine if they got back together in, like, season three, if now that Peter is not powerful, if you know what I mean? And after she knows everything, if that would be a potential, because I would find that quite hilarious, and Scott having to deal with it, but I don't think it will actually go down that road. But I do think that Peter's interest probably wasn't ungenuine. Like, I think that Peter reminds me of Spike in Buffy in a way, in that he is very, his animalistic traits are very strong and very powerful, but he is also unusually sort of sensual as well. Like, he's really interested in clothes and being classy, and in the way that Spike in Buffy is really interested in, like, food and television and that kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? It's Peter. Peter very much reminds me of that, and so I wouldn't be surprised if he was really interested in dating Melissa in a way, even though that's obviously not the main objective here.
Yeah. My big thing for this episode was about Derek. And this goes back to the quote that I shared about, you know, him talking to Jackson and Scott showing up and saying, excuse me, co-captain. This scene was so, it made me really understand Derek more and like him a lot more too, because you sort of see into, like, what kind of person he actually is, because he's sitting there and, you know, he's saying to Jackson that nobody cares about him, that he's just going to kill him, blah, blah, blah. And Scott shows up to defend him, and Derek says, you know, I'll take you out too. I have no problem doing that. And then literally the next second, the hunters show up and start blasting the house with bullets. And Scott gets shot. And Derek, like, the first thing that he thinks of is, Scott, get out of here. Go. I don't want you getting hurt. I don't want you getting caught or anything. Then he walks out the front door so he can be captured by the hunters so that Scott doesn't get caught. And I'm just like, obviously every single threat that he's given to any of them up to this point are, like, null and void, because he doesn't want to hurt them. He's risking his own capture to save Scott's life. And I just thought that, you know, it was a really great look into the type of person that Derek actually is.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I can't believe that that never comes up. Like, I can't believe that Scott doesn't process that, you know, later, when, you know, how he still fights off Derek for, you know, another season or whatever, and they're still, even by the end of season two, not really the greatest allies.
Yeah.
And I don't understand how even, like, you know, how he can't appreciate things like this. And it's just, Derek is so noble, and he's so stupid, and it's, you know, he's very much all talk in regards to all his threats. And it kind of reminds me of, like, Draco Malfoy not being able to kill Dumbledore. You know, it's not exactly the same thing, obviously, because Draco never has no, you know, actual moment of redemption or turnaround. But Yeah, he talks big because he thinks he can get away with it, or that's the way that he can get what he wants, or even because he doesn't realize that he can talk to these people without threatening them. But yeah, he is all talk, and it just also made me interested in the way that he was yelling at Jackson when he's saying, you know, just because you've got perfect hair and you drive an expensive car doesn't mean anyone cares about you. And I'm sitting there going, you know who else has got perfect hair and drives an expensive car? Derek. And I was like, oh, honey, you are projecting your issues that no one loves you right now. Like, you really are. And yeah, it's just going to be very interesting to see him kind of potentially opening up more to let that good come through. And as I've said, I know that my friend Brooke, who helps with our Tumblr, will understand what I mean now, because I keep making Avatar The Last Airbender references and she's currently watching it. He's so much like Zuko. He's so, so like Zuko, where he can't help doing good, even when he's still like yelling about what a bad guy he is. And it's just, you'll watch this show one day and you'll understand what I mean. But he's so much like Zuko. And I can't with that kind of character. It is like my weakness. It's stupid, noble people who think they're bad and then realize that they're not, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. It made me really appreciate Derek more, like just seeing that sort of insight into him that I didn't really pick up on before. And, you know, my love for him just keeps growing. And that's not to say that, you know, he isn't annoyingly stupid sometimes, like we said. But yeah, I really like seeing this side of Derek.
Yeah, and I mean, you also saw quite a bit of his weakness in this episode in regards to how quickly he submitted to Peter, and I don't know how much of that is like the actual instinctive power of the alpha against a family member who's a beta, but, you know, he pretty much accepts Peter, accepts Laura's death as an accident, and is, you know, submissive to Peter straight away. And, you know, I don't know if that's because, you know, Peter played on the aspect that Derek is all alone, no one loves him, and that, you know, just because he's got perfect hair and drives an expensive car doesn't mean anyone is really his friend. But, you know, Peter's there to be his family and love him, and Derek just falls for that hook, line, and sinker. So, and I mean, I don't think it's not valid, because I don't think Peter is out to cause Derek any harm at all. I don't think that Peter wants to hurt Derek. I think that it just ends up being that Derek doesn't agree with what Peter wants to do to other people. Unless I'm forgetting something major, because obviously we know that Peter wants to build his pack at this point. But yeah, his submission to Peter is pretty telling as well, because I don't think that he, you know, Derek has in any way wanted to be the person in control, you know, wanted to be the person looking after Scott, you know, wanted to be any of these things, and he's clearly very bad at it. So yeah, I think he was pretty happy to be like, oh god, I don't have to be this guy in charge because I secretly don't know what I'm doing.
With that same scene too, in the house with Jackson and everything, I wanted to talk a little bit about Scott too, because I really like this side of Scott where, I mean, obviously he doesn't like Jackson and he has so many reasons to hate Jackson, and maybe not to the point of, you know, letting Derek kill him, but really not caring what happens to him. And yet he goes there to fight Derek because it's the right thing to do. And when, you know, I think of Scott, I just think of he's got such a big heart, and it gets him in trouble sometimes, but I really like that about him, that he makes stupid mistakes for all the right reasons.
Yeah, yeah, it is. That's true. And, you know, potentially because he thinks too well of people or doesn't assume the worst of people in certain situations. And the flip side, it goes that he's not trusting people that he should trust. But, you know, because for him, I think he thinks a lot of things are black and white. He thinks this looks like a bad guy. This walks like a bad guy. It talks like a bad guy. It must be a bad guy. Like he thinks about Derek for most of it, and he doesn't really understand the complexities and subtleties, but it's because he's so invested in this idea of good and bad, and that is a sort of nobility of itself. The last thing I had was just in regards to Kate again, when she brings in Allison to see Derek after Derek's sort of given himself up. And Derek, you know, she has Derek strung up and he's all wolfed out and angry, and Kate says, isn't he beautiful? And it's just like, no, no, no. Because it's like what you said last week in regards to the book, in regards to her kind of what her moral standards are and what the other moral standards of the hunters are if they found out that she'd, you know, been sleeping with a werewolf and all of that stuff. But it's just gross. Like, it's just not nice, and I don't understand why. Is it in the same way that, like, a big game hunter looks at a tiger and is like, isn't that beautiful? I'm going to shoot it, kind of thing. And you know what I mean? It's really odd. Like, and I just found that really, you know, and whereas Victoria is like, they're disgusting kind of thing. And, you know, like, but just the way that Kate said that is just, again, another aspect of how strangely she regards this whole thing and how skewed she is compared to the other hunters.
Yeah, she's so twisted, and like, she contradicts herself because, you know, she wants to kill all these werewolves, and yet, you know, I really do think that she thinks that he's beautiful like that. I mean, in a sort of dangerous kind of way, you know, like you said, with the big game hunters and stuff. And it's just, it's so twisted.
And I mean, it just sounds like she respects them and, like, the werewolves, if you know what I mean. Like, that you're saying that, like, oh, isn't he beautiful? It's like that she respects them as a predator as opposed to, you know, someone like Victoria, who's, like, crazy in her own way. And you'd think if she respected them as a predator that she would be more intrinsically interested in playing by the rules and, like, you know, acting as a sort of animal control for particularly dangerous werewolves who are actually killing people and not wanting to harm, you know, the shy little werewolves that just keep to themselves.
Yeah.
Because that's what it sounds like, you know, when she says that she has this respect for them as a beast. And yet her behavior is very much not like that.
Yeah, you would almost think that she'd, you know, play by the rules because that would make a fair game and that would be more exciting than, you know, cheating or something like that.
Yeah.
But she doesn't. And yeah, she's very, like I said, she contradicts herself. It's very strange, but it's an interesting dynamic to see her, you know, one second be willing to sleep with him and then the other second, you know, torturing him and wanting to kill him.
Yeah.
My final point for this episode was the big question that we sort of get at the end of it, where we ask, who is the vet? And he says that 90% of the time, I'm mostly treating cats and dogs. And Scott sort of goes, mostly? And he goes, mostly. And we now know that the vet's not the alpha, obviously, because Peter is. But we also know that he knows more about what's going on than he was letting on before. And we had asked previously on other episodes and on, you know, a column that I wrote for Hypable who the vet was and what his role was and everything. We had some theories, but this, to me, you mentioned in the recap that he was a sort of like a vet for werewolves, and I think that's definitely a possibility, but just the way he said this, like, because we had asked ourselves before if he could possibly be a hunter who decided not to go hunting anymore because he befriended a werewolf and realized that they're actual human beings. And to me, I don't know, like, when he says, I'm mostly treating cats and dogs, like, in the present tense, it made it seem like he does this a lot. Like, still, currently, he's treating werewolves, and I don't know if he travels to do it or something like that, but he's still active in whatever he's doing.
Yeah.
Whereas before, I don't think I really thought that maybe it was just because Scott had turned into a werewolf and he had helped the Hales, but this just seems like a bigger thing to me now.
Yeah, I mean, it may have been that he was quite active until, you know, I think since the Hales sort of all died and before the Alpha sort of came back and then bit Scott, I think there was not much werewolf activity in Beacon Hills, so maybe he wasn't doing that, you know, between now and then, but that, yeah, perhaps when the Hales were around that he was potentially, like, their family doctor or something like that, you know, or that he was, you know, at least, you know, like I've said before, a kind of, like, watcher-type person, or that he is, you know, involved in the scene in some way.
All right, now we're going to get into some news. The big one is that season 3 has started filming, which is very exciting. Looking forward to getting some more behind-the-scenes pictures and information out of there. You know, definitely check out Hypable.com because we do cover all the major stuff that comes out of there with the spoilers of the week and, you know, anything that we think is significant enough to warrant a post on there, so make sure you're following that. Speaking of spoiler of the week, the first one is about Callie, who's one of the alphas, and we learned a little bit more about her, and it says that Callie will be one of the most dangerous alphas we've seen on the show. She's inspired by great comic book villains like Mystique from X-Men. And we also know that the actress, Felicia Turrell, has a background in martial arts, including the Israeli self-defense system, Krav Maga, and will be drawing on that experience throughout the season. This is really exciting to me because I'm really interested to see what kind of character Callie is going to be, especially I love villains. I love really dangerous, smart villains. And I like it when they're females too, because, you know, it's just kind of an extra dynamic. It's always interesting to see that on screen, I think. And Mystique is one of my favorite villains from X-Men as well. And I just really love the idea that they're going to have her, you know, that the actress has this background in martial arts and that they're going to use it. And I just find that really exciting.
You know, curious as to whether that means she'll do, like, a lot of her own stunts. Like, I know Tyler Hoechlin does nearly all of his own stunts in the show and works a lot on his fitness in order to be able to do those. So maybe she will be doing a lot of her own stunts and things like that as well.
Yeah, which could possibly allow them to do a bit more exciting things, you know, close-up shots and stuff when you don't have to worry about there being a stunt double in there. And also with this article that it came out on the MTV Remote Control blog, they had a picture of her partially in her werewolf makeup and stuff too, and she's looking pretty cool. I mean, it's pretty much just like the teeth in and stuff, but definitely excited to see her character. Mm-hmm. The next bit of news was sort of, it was a little surprising and I think a little disappointing for some people in the fandom, but this one was about Colton Haynes and how he left the show. He won't be in season 3, but he, you know, a lot of people were thinking that he was going to be in the movie Divergent, and that was like why he left the show, because he had this huge role to go on there. And there was no confirmation. There was really like no strong evidence to support that, but it was just one of the rumors that was sort of floating around, and it made sense at the time. But apparently he's got a recurring role on the show Arrow now. And just to read a little bit of the article here, it says, in a report from TV Guide, we've learned that Haynes will be appearing on the show in 2013 as a character named Roy Harper. Various forms of the character have shown up in different versions of the Green Arrow universe, and it's still uncertain what characteristics his incarnation will be, what characteristics he'll take on. We do know, however, that he'll be a, quote, a handsome, street-savvy teenager from the Glades, the harsh, poverty-stricken portion of Starling City. And then, in addition to his mysterious character and possible secret identity, because obviously this is a superhero show, Roy Harper will also be a love interest for Thea, played by Willa Holland. He'll cross paths with her in an unexpected way and is destined to become a significant part of her life and an important player in the larger world of Arrow. So yeah, this was a little surprising considering that Arrow's in its first season still. I don't watch the show. I was thinking about getting into it. It doesn't look bad. I've heard some pretty decent things about it. But as far as its longevity, I'm not quite sure it has the potential that Teen Wolf does. So to me, this was pretty surprising to see him. It was almost like taking a step down. But at the same time, like, I'm happy with whatever he wants to do, especially if he thought that this was a better opportunity for him. And my idea was that maybe this character is going to be more prominent in the show than Jackson was in Teen Wolf, and perhaps he just wanted to step into the spotlight a little bit more, and that's why he decided to switch shows. What were your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like that, you know, when he took it, he was doing it under the impression that it would be a more high-profile role, but Arrow does not really seem to be taking off in that way, and again, I don't know if it's going to get cancelled or what. I do know that the showrunner is friends with Jeff Davis, like, pretty good friends. When Jeff had Twitter, they tweeted at each other all the time, and it was really funny, and the showrunner was, like, teasing Jeff about Steric and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, so I remember that.
Potentially they could have something worked out, like, where, you know, he could borrow Colton back for some time or something like that. You know, like, if the relationship between the two shows is good, potentially that could be a good thing for Teen Wolf if we do want a bit more Jackson.
Yeah, I could see that working. And, I mean, like Jeff Davis said before, he's not out of the show. They're not going to kill him off. They're going to leave it open for him to come back. So maybe even in the second half of season 3, if something gets worked out, you know, able to join back up again, but we'll just sort of have to see. And, I mean, this doesn't necessarily discount the fact that he might be in Divergent still. I think that would be really cool. I actually did start reading the book. I'm about halfway through it now, and now I know the two characters that people were thinking about he might be good for, either the character Four or the character Peter, and I definitely agree with the people who said Peter, because Peter's not a nice guy, and that's a little bit closer to Jackson from Teen Wolf, so that leap in my mind was pretty good, but... yeah, we'll just have to keep an eye on that, and, you know, hopefully he gets lucky and he's able to make it into the movie.
Yeah, that would be cool, because that definitely is going to be a really high-profile thing, so...
The next bit of news was another spoiler of the week, and this one was basically just a photograph of the head sculpt for a new character called Ennis, and Ennis is the fifth and final member of the Alpha Pack, and this is really the first official word that we've gotten on him, including his name, and obviously we kind of see what he's going to look like. And all they said was that Ennis is going to be a force of pure brutality, and that's pretty much where they left it. If his head sculpt is anything to go by, he looks pretty scary.
Yeah, he looks, like, thuggish. He looks kind of like a gorilla. Like, you know, he looks like one of those people that's got not very many brains and is, you know, just sort of a big, thick piece of muscle.
Yeah, I mean, his face looks, like, so muscular that I don't even want to know, like, the size of his biceps. I mean, he just... he looks going to be...
It's funny, if we've got this head sculpt, it must be cast. Like, it's got to be a mold for a person who exists. So who's the actor? Like, do we know this?
Yeah, I mean, apparently not. And the thing is, I can't quote it verbatim or anything because it was a little while ago, but there was something floating around on Tumblr about this character and stuff. And from my understanding, if this piece of information is correct, is that he's actually going to be in the first episode, I thought. So I don't really know why we don't know this yet, but I don't know. We'll have to keep an eye out and see if they announce anything soon.
Yeah.
One of the other funny things, too, was some people were like, hey, it looks like the face of Bo from...
It does a bit.
Yeah. I was like, oh, I didn't even think about that. Oh. Okay, and our last little thing here was another interesting one. This was a picture that came out of an article on the LA Times, and it was a behind-the-scenes photo, and the actual article was kind of interesting. They talked about behind-the-scenes stuff and the warehouse that they're renting and the sound stages and how they're also going to be shooting on location a few days for each episode. But the picture that came with it caused, I think, a lot more fandom reaction than the article did, because it's a picture of a behind-the-scenes shot. We see the cameras and everything, and we see Dylan O'Brien and a new actress, Caitlin Custer, who are filming in a wine cellar. And, you know, Dylan's sort of holding her face and they're very close. And the caption to the picture reads, Caitlin Custer and Dylan O'Brien film a scene of MTV's teen series Teen Wolf, which relocated from Georgia to LA to take advantage of a California tax credit. And then it just says what the show's about. And further description of the picture in the actual article says, the director watches a monitor as an actor rushes down a staircase into a basement wine cellar, searching among the racks and bottles for his childhood crush. And this was sort of like, okay, what's going on? Because we hadn't heard, we knew that Caitlin Custer was cast, but we never got any information about who she was, and we actually still don't know for sure. But a lot of people are saying that the wording here with the childhood crush means that this could be Heather, because we know from Heather's description earlier that she's a longtime friend of Styles, who's celebrating her 17th birthday. That's sort of her role in the show. So, I mean, an obvious leap in logic would be that she's Heather. But, you know, regardless of that at all, I think that this behind-the-scenes photo is really interesting, because the last we saw, Styles is completely obsessed with Lydia, and Lydia was just about to get back with Jackson, and we know that there's going to be a 4-month leap between the end of season 2 and the beginning of season 3, and I'm just really interested. I mean, Derek aside, Lydia aside, you know, everything, I'm really interested to know who this is and how they're going to bring her onto the show and to see this actual scene take place in the show.
I was interested in the fact that she doesn't look unlike Lydia in that she's kind of got similar, like, hair, you know, that's kind of strawberry blonde hair. And it reminded me of when Styles was drunk and he was, like, talking about, I love girls, especially girls who have got, you know, like, strawberry blonde hair and green eyes and 5'3". And Scott goes, oh, like Lydia? And Styles is like, yeah, how did you know I was talking about Lydia? Because on one hand, that could very simply be like, oh, Styles is drunk and thinks that Scott doesn't know, you know, who he's referring to. But it was also making me think, if this is Heather, what if it means that, like, Styles has a type, like, that he likes more than one girl that has this kind of look, if you know what I mean? Because I look at her and I, you know, from far away, it could be Lydia. Like, you know, it's... they're not dissimilar looking, and I wonder if that will be something that comes into play at all, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, as soon as you said that, when you quoted that line, I was like, oh, that's really interesting,
yeah.
Especially if, you know, planted that on purpose, and then we get more backstory as far as, like, his friends and his type and stuff like that. Mm. I think, yeah, that could be really cool.
Yeah, and just very quickly about this and about the stuff that's on location, a little bit about shooting. I was a little bit confused a couple of weeks ago because they started shooting some scenes in the Paramount lot, which is a very famous studio because it's the only one still left in the actual Hollywood area as opposed to out in Burbank and stuff. It's where they shoot Glee, it's where they shoot Community, Happy Endings, and all Ryan Murphy's other shows, American Horror Story and New Normal. But I was really surprised to see that Teen Wolf were going to shoot there, and I was trying to work out whether they were actually, if this was their new studio, or if they were using something specific there on location, like their water tank or their city scene, because aside from the sound stages that the shows use specifically, they have some resources that people can use that are, you know, if they need a water tank or if they need a, you know, a streetscape, they can hire out those areas of the lot that don't belong to a particular show. And I think it was that was what they were doing. Whatever they were doing something that belongs to the Paramount lot in general, not their studio stages there, because I did a little bit of research and found out they weren't. And then this article came out, and it seems like that they're not actually based in a studio, that they're not like at Warner Brothers Studio, they're not at a studio with sound stages. They've built their own sound stages in a warehouse privately, that they're not actually...
yeah.
Using a television studio, and that interested me. And if someone actually knows the facts on that, I'd be interested to see if they were based in a studio or if they've actually just privately built their own studios, because that's not that common as far as I know. But I suppose it's quite common when you go out to location, like when they were filming in Atlanta, like that they were, you know, they got a warehouse and put their sets inside it. So I guess that's how they're used to operating. But I'd expected them to come to California and actually be based on a lot, like the Universal lot or whatever lot that they wanted to hire space on. And then when I saw them at Paramount, I was like, oh, maybe they've taken some stages at Paramount. But no, they haven't. So, yeah, I'm very curious as to how they're actually setting up their production now that they're in LA. So if anyone knows anything about that, I'd be interested.
Yeah, definitely. All right, we're going to get into our last section now, which is just our listener feedback. The first one comes from Tumblr, and this is from Devil in the Mainframe. And this person said, I recently rewatched the first few episodes of season one, and I found it strange that Scott, who adamantly hates being a werewolf and rejects that part of himself, seems to have no problem using his powers for his own gain. I got this when he was arguing with Styles about playing in his first lacrosse match, and he said that he wanted a normal life to date Allison and play first line. Also, when he's bowling, he uses his powers to win, then turns around and says that he doesn't want Allison to find out what he is, and then has a fight with Derek that I felt had very little to do with the bus driver's death. I like Scott, who really is all heart. I just find his actions hard to understand sometimes, and I was wondering what your thoughts were, especially as you'll be covering episode 10 soon. Love the podcast, can't wait for more. First of all, thank you, that's always very nice to hear. Yeah, I started to type out a long answer to this, and I was like, no, you know, this is going to be perfect for the podcast, especially since I wanted to know what Natalie thought about this too, but for me, I agree that sometimes his motives are a little strange. And that, you know, it's obvious that he doesn't want to be a werewolf, and yet he has no problem using it, especially like what really hit me was on, you know, the lacrosse field where he uses those extra powers and in practice and stuff to be better at lacrosse than he actually would be otherwise. But to me, this is more of just like a realistic thing of what high schoolers do. It's not necessarily that he's contradicting himself or anything on purpose. It's more like he doesn't want it, but then again, when it happens and when he can use it, he's not opposed to doing it. It's sort of, to me, just like a boy thing where, you know, it's there, it's happening. He sort of flip-flops because he doesn't really know how he feels about it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I do. I do. And I mean, and I think that's very much what I was sort of trying to say earlier in regards to Styles, Derek, and Scott, in that, you know, Derek doesn't have a lot of time for Scott or a lot of respect for Scott's choices because he does things like this, whereas Styles is very kind of logical and doesn't give in to his irrationality even when he starts to feel it. So, yeah, I mean, Scott is pretty willing to take advantage of what he has, even though he complains about it all the time. But I think at the end of the day, he'd rather not have it. Like, I do think that at the end of the day, he would rather not be a werewolf, even if it meant not playing first line at lacrosse and all of that kind of thing. Though I do think, you know, I totally get Jackson's perspective when he's like, well, if this is how you're doing it, technically it's cheating, isn't it? Because it is. I mean, if this was the Olympic Games, you wouldn't let someone with, you know, supernatural powers compete against the rest of the, you know, normal people. Like, you know, in professional competition, any kind of enhancement is not allowed. So I totally get Jackson's perspective there. And if Scott was really, really moral, like if he was really moral to the point of caring about the honour of school sports, yeah, he wouldn't play sports because of that. And I'm sure I've seen that reference somewhere. It might not have been this. It might have even been in like a Teen Wolf fanfiction, but I can't remember it. But I remember seeing something, I think what I'm remembering is a Teen Wolf fanfiction talking about Laura and Derek and saying that they weren't allowed to compete in, like, athletic stuff at school. Like, they weren't allowed to compete in, like, running races and stuff at school as children because it was not fair. Like, their parents said, no, that's not fair, if you know what I mean, on the others. And obviously no one's telling Scott that it's not fair except Jackson, and he's not going to listen to Jackson. But I swear I've seen that kind of comparison in other fandoms as well, like it's people with powers and them saying, you have an unfair advantage. Scott clearly doesn't care too much about his unfair advantage, or it's never been put to him in a way that made him feel bad about it, so I'm not sure.
Right. The other question came from our email, and this was quite a long email, but very, very nice. We really appreciated it. And I just grabbed the first paragraph, or I think it was actually the second paragraph, because this is a really good point that really got me thinking. But this is from the other Maddie, and she says, first thing was about the eyes. I know you guys talked about it not long ago, but a theory that a friend of mine mentioned to me was that with the eyes is that an alpha always has red eyes, obviously, but the second in command in a pack has blue eyes. So Derek in season one has blue eyes. This is because he was part of Peter's pack, but he was in the pack before Scott. Jackson had the blue eyes because he was the first person that Derek had bitten, and then the gold eyes belonged to the other betas. This is the first theory to me that makes the most sense and that I can't really find any fault in it. I mean, it explains the different colors and explains that it's not genetic.
Yep. I would totally buy this as well. Like, yeah. I would absolutely buy this. It'd make sense except for the fact that I'm pretty sure that we're going to see that being second in command isn't necessarily a thing, like, in the order of bitten. Like, maybe at the moment it is because Derek's pack dynamics aren't very structured, but, like, if Boyd became Derek second, it might turn his eyes blue or something like that, if you know what I mean. I'd totally buy this, though. I would totally, absolutely buy this as right.
Yeah, this was a great theory.
The only other one I've heard that makes sense to me at this point is to do with emotion and having personally experienced death in certain ways or something like that. And I mean, the way that was put was also quite valid based on like what Derek and Jackson had experienced compared to what a lot of the other wolves had experienced. And I think it was kind of like comparable to like in Harry Potter, like being able to see Thestrals, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And that, you know, because of Jackson's parents, Derek's family, But then, you know, we obviously don't know if Isaac has experienced it or if it's literally, you know, because Isaac's obviously lost his father as well within the process of the show. I don't know exactly how that could work, but this theory, this one that you've emailed in, this is the one I'm going with.
Yeah. Yep. This is my favorite so far. This is really cool. I hope that's what it is, because I think that would be interesting for them to explore. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. And how that power transference could happen as well, like if the hierarchy of the pack changed.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. I like it. Let's go with it. I'll send a note to Jeff Davis. This is what it is now. We figured it out.
Yeah.
You better make it happen. Yeah. All right, well, that's all we have for you this week. So we shall be back before the end of 2012 with our final episode of the season one, which will be episodes 11 and 12 of season one. On that episode, we will have another special guest for you, and we may have a little Christmas present to give out as well. We're not exactly sure how we'll be doing it yet, but that may be a thing that you can look forward to. But yeah, there'll definitely be a third contender next time, someone who's been very important to the show so far, and yeah, we'll give you more on that closer to the time. But, you know, until then, have a Merry Christmas, and in that break between Christmas and New Year's, you should be able to expect another episode from us. So, yeah, I'll say bye for now and happy holidays.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Peter Claus Peter Claus Scott.